Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We do have that partial government shutdown in effect with no negotiations taking place overnight between Democrats and Republicans. That shutdown means that many workers could be furloughed or even fired, as President Trump has mentioned.
I'm Lauren Berry, and welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey stations across the country. Today, we're talking about the government shutdown and how it affects regular Americans like you and me. Fundamentally, no matter where you work, you want to get paid, and the first thing that happens when the government can't get its act together is that essential workers have to show up, but they're not getting their paychecks. Here's how this breaks down. Members of the U.S. Armed Forces will have to report to work without pay. Support staff, like clerical workers, will be furloughed. Air traffic control services will continue, but again without pay until the government is funded again. Social Security benefits, considered mandatory under law, will continue regardless of a shutdown, so recipients can expect to continue receiving their payments. However, the Social Security Administration will furlough many workers, so fewer workers could mean that processing new Social Security applications could be delayed. Food stamps and SNAP benefits will continue during a shutdown, but the number of people administering them will be greatly depleted because most of them will be furloughed. And the ones who remain are working without pay. One bright spot in the federal system is the Postal Service, which will experience, quote, business as usual because they're an independent entity that's generally funded through the sale of products and services, not by tax dollars. It's worth noting that President Donald Trump and members of Congress will also continue to receive paychecks during a shutdown. Their pay is constitutionally protected. Lucky them. Because October 1st marks the beginning of the government's 2026 fiscal year, no funding is currently in place for active duty and reserve military members and most other workers. Here's Congresswoman Debbie Dingell on WWJ News Radio in Detroit talking to anchor Jackie Page about why this is happening and what to expect next.
Look, this is, I don't think anybody wanted to see us get to where we are, but the fact of the matter is we have not really sat down at a table with Republicans to even talk to us about where this budget needs to go. The president, for the very first time since he's been president in January, canceled a meeting last week, but finally met with the Democratic leader of the House and the Senate on Monday. And here is why. I mean, first of all, Republicans control in the White House and have the majority of votes in both the House and Senate. So I call this a Republican shutdown because they control all the houses. But you're seeing Democrats push back because we're hear from the American people every single day how worried they are about the costs of food, their homes, and health care. And right now, this is when insurance premiums are going out to people. The exchange opens on November 1st, and the Affordable Care Tax Credit runs out at the end of December. It is going to be a very significant cost increase to many people. Already, 16 million people are going to lose health insurance as a result of the bill, I won't use names on the radio, that was passed earlier this year. And I'll give you an example. In my district, I have a 60-year-old couple. They're both 60, working. Their combined income, $82,000. If that tax credit expires, their health insurance is going to increase by $11,250, or 164% increase. At some point, I got to speak up for the people in my district. I've got to fight for them. Everybody in this country, when they're sick, should be able to go to the doctor, period. That is just something that I believe in. And we're asking the Republicans to help us protect all of our constituents on healthcare costs, among other things. and we have no guardrails. Money that we budgeted earlier in the year has either been pocket rescissioned or EO. Money we all authorized and assigned from the president has been held back from school lunch programs, from law enforcement. We need guardrails, and we got to lower costs for our people.
Congresswoman, is there any light at the end of the tunnel on this? Could you see it ending anytime soon, or should we kind of hunker down for the long haul?
First of all, I'm someone that always says you should try to see the light. This is very serious. I mean, I'm in Washington. I'm going to come home for the day tomorrow because there'll be it's Yom Kippur for those of the Jewish faith, but I'll be right back here on Friday morning. And we're here. The Democrats have been here for Monday and Tuesday. House members are gone. We need to be working together. So, you know, I hope we can all come to the table. I learned a long time ago, compromise is not a dirty word. But at some point, you got to be willing to fight for those that you represent. They need to know we're fighting for them.
Okay. How will this affect your constituents?
Well, you know, first of all, it's going to impact a lot of people in our communities. People may recall the last time that this happened, President Trump was president then as well. We had a lot of neighbors and friends, the TSA workers who are mandatory employees who have to go to work but aren't paid. And at some point they couldn't afford meals. One woman was going to be fired because she had to report to work, but she wasn't being paid and didn't have money to pay for daycare. So I'm going to, when I get back later today for the day, I'm going to talk to those TSA workers, those air traffic controllers. But we have people in all kinds of agencies. Seniors will get their checks. Mail will be delivered. But if you're trying to do something with the Social Security Department, if there are mistakes, you're not going to be able to get through. The EPA lab is going to be closed. NOAA, which has had severe cuts already. So people don't, you know, we have a lot of law enforcement agencies that will be deemed essential employees, but they're not going to get paid. And that we have to be aware of all that. It's not what I wish on for anybody.
When the government signals instability, how does that affect your bank account? Bob Rusk.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Chief Economist at Fact and Opinion Economics joined Rob Hart on the new Business Hour to discuss.
Government shutdown is a familiar dance at this point. It's been used it's happened quite a bit over the last 30 years. So I'm sure we have research and data that tells us about the impact of a government shutdown on the economy in both the near and long term.
Yeah, we do. But, you know, every single one is a little bit different. And so you never exactly know how these things are going to play out. They are dangerous. And the Trump administration has made it clear that it is going to use this opportunity to try to create some full-time unemployment on the part of existing government workers if it goes through. They're not going to have temporary furloughs. They're going to trim government payrolls permanently. They've been seeking to do this, and they think this is an opportunity to do it. And this is basically their counter proposal to the Democrats saying that they won't agree to extending the debt and to keep the shutdown from occurring unless they get extra money poured into Obamacare that was taken out by the big, beautiful bill. So we're at an impasse here, and the Democrats are trying to get something for this. And the Republicans are saying no way. And so we'll see.
What are the second order effects if these furloughed workers are laid off permanently? I mean, obviously, everybody who's laid off by the government will eventually get a new job somewhere. But in the near term, what would that do to an already cooling labor market?
Well, that's an interesting question because, you know, we have these different things going on. One is that the job growth has slowed, partly because there's somewhat weaker demand, but because we closed the border and we don't have the same amount of people coming over the border as labor supply to go to work. So because labor supply is crimped, economists now think that maximum job growth on a monthly basis might be as little as 50,000 per month. And before the benchmark revision that we saw a couple of weeks ago, we thought the jobs were growing at 140,000 a month. But that revision basically took it down to 70,000. That helps to explain why there was that three-month revision that took job growth down even more. So we're trying to come to grips really with what job growth is. And at the same time, when job growth has come down and people are complaining there aren't enough jobs, we're being told that jobs are going to disappear because of AI. And that maybe there are even now too many jobs out there because AI is going to be taking them away. So there's an awful lot of confused discussion about what's going on in the labor market.
And speaking of jobs, we do have a jobs report on Friday. And if the Bureau of Labor Statistics is shuttered, actually, I've heard that number has been canceled. So if Friday is not jobs day after all, you know, for those who try to assess the health of the labor market, what do you do when you're flying blind?
Well, if you fly blind, then you better make sure you're looking out the window. But I have not heard that the numbers canceled. I believe that they firmed this number up on Wednesday or Thursday beforehand. So there's no reason why they couldn't announce it. You know, it doesn't take much to announce it. The number has basically already been generated and vetted, and that's all set to be released. So I think that sounds like an exaggeration. However, there are the possibilities for disruptions out there, and it is possible that they could decide not to release the number. You know, the government wants to make it sound like this is really a draconian thing. The Trump administration could say they're not going to release the number because of the shutdown. There are a lot of possibilities here, and there's a lot of politics involved. And so I don't know if the economics really tells us what the politics is going to do. I think it rarely does.
At the top of the show, we gave you the Democratic Congresswoman's view of the shutdown. So now, to balance the scales, as we always do on Deadline, here's the conservative Mark Cox Show talking about what the GOP is holding out for.
Charles Payne, host of Making Money.
So let's talk government shutdown for a minute. I know it, at least on futures, I haven't seen the numbers here lately. The futures were down a little bit on this. What kind of impact does this have on the economy?
Very little. I think the markets futures are down just slightly on some maybe other things. You know, we just had the ADP number come in that was really low, but it's one of these things where it's more hyped than anything else. And at the end of the day, they all agree to a deal, and whoever was furloughed gets paid back money. And it's like a free vacation, and the government gets even more bloated. They need to stop this whole charade because, you know, if this is one of these areas where they start this horse trading and we end up with these bridges of nowhere, you know, the so-called temporary debt ceiling has been around for decades and it's not temporary, you know. So if you get rid of it, this becomes a leverage. It becomes a leveraging point. It becomes a talking point. And, you know, I don't know why. I mean, it feels like both parties want to keep it in because it always seems to kind of give them political fodder. But it doesn't do anything for the American public. And so I feel like if there was a way we could all vote on this as a nation, hey, get rid of it, because it's not, if it was a debt ceiling, it was a debt ceiling, but it's not. It just becomes a point where you guys can, you know, fire up the masses and then cut deals and say, hey, you know, we had to do it for the sake of keeping the government open. But, you know, we have learned something. We've learned this one term, non-essential workers. We've learned that we can have a functioning government without perhaps a lot fewer employees. And that's what those are supposed to be all about. So,
right.
It's really just more theater than anything else.
We're starting a new month today, October 1st. What can we expect out of the Fed this month? Are we going to see another quarter cent drop? And if so, how do you think that could impact the lending market as well as the housing market?
It's interesting you said that. So in anticipation of the Fed making that first cut, we saw mortgage rates come down a lot, and we saw a big jump in applications. And so since the cut, Mortgage rates have gone up a little bit. You know, there's the old buy the rumor, sell the news kind of reaction. This morning we found out that overall mortgage applications in the last week were down almost 13%, most of that in refis. So there's no doubt that this is extraordinarily sensitive. Like, the housing market wants this really badly, and I think it's something that is critical for everyone. So, again, we'll see what happens, because the government's number comes out on Friday. But ADP down 32,000. The street thought we were going to be up 45,000. And what even more adds more salt to the wound is that the only niche of hiring that was up was in large companies. Small companies were devastated. So lending costs have to come down. They just simply have to come down. And I think a minimum of a 20. Hey, if we get a Friday jobs report like the Marist's ADP report, we could be talking about 50 basis points.
Here's Tommy Tucker at WWL Radio in New Orleans with more on the shutdown.
We welcome in Patrick Penfield, a professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse University. So October 1st means new tariffs. What are those new tariffs going to be on, and how are they going to affect us all?
Yeah, so Dave, we got 10% tariff on lumber, 25% tariff on kitchen cabinets, bathrooms, furniture, 100% tariff on movies that are made outside the United States. So it's crazy. So unfortunately, the amount of money we've brought in from tariffs have tripled. So in 2024, we brought in about $10 billion a month. Now we're bringing in about $30 billion a month.
All right. So will that dramatic increase mean things will be more expensive? If I'm remodeling my bathroom or I'm buying new furniture, will that mean that I'm paying more for all of that as a consumer?
Yeah, you'll probably see that like in a month or two, because, you know, you've got retailers that have a lot of inventory that they still have to move through. So eventually that cost will be passed on to the consumer. So last month we saw a 2.9% increase in inflation from last year. So, you know, everything is going up, and I know a lot of your listeners are probably seeing that too. And so that's the unfortunate thing with the tariffs. Fortunate, because gas and prices have been down or flat. So it really hasn't, we haven't seen that impact yet, but it's coming, unfortunately.
But we've seen before where some of these tariffs kick in, but before we feel the pain of them, the White House cancels the tariffs or negotiates a new trade deal to reduce their impact. What do you expect? Will these tariffs be with us for the foreseeable future, or do you see any scenario in which they get pulled back?
You know, Dave, your guess is as good as mine. I think that's a dilemma. So if you're in business these days, it's this uncertainty that's driving everybody crazy. You know, in business, we like certainty because you want to know what the price is, so that way you can charge your customer the right amount and hopefully be able to make a profit. These days, everything's just all over the place. And so I think that's the frustrating part about being in business these days, is just trying to understand what is the price. You know, so I assume, like you do, Dave, that probably there'll be some negotiations that go on. But some of the stuff is sticking, you know, from a price standpoint. And eventually, you know, if I told you, you know, the tariffs have tripled, you know, it's over $30 billion a month versus $10 billion a month from last year. Absolutely. So, you know, the stuff is sticking. We're seeing, again, these price increases from the tariffs. Unfortunately, what's really going on, Dave, is companies aren't really moving stuff here yet. They're just moving to different countries to get a lower price. So we haven't seen that.
So if the tariff goes up in country A overseas, but not as much in country B, they'll move their manufacturing to country B instead of bringing it home to the United States.
Exactly. That's exactly what's going on right now. And so that's why we haven't seen this renaissance in manufacturing here in the States yet. hopefully, you know, if that's, again, President Trump's plan to get more manufacturing here in the States, we'll start seeing that hopefully in 2026. So far, hasn't really, you know, nothing's really materialized that we thought it would happen.
Kind of interesting that we're now playing a game of whack-a-mole where companies are moving from higher tariff countries overseas to other lower tariff countries overseas instead of bringing their production back to the U.S. We just got the new job openings and labor turnover survey, known in the industry as the JOLTS report, and the government shut down at midnight. How are these things going to impact you, your finances, and your daily life? Let's find out from Mark Hamrick at Bankrate. Morning, Mark. In our future, though, maybe some impact from the government shutdown. But first, let's talk about this JOLTS report, the Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey. It's just out. What did we learn from that about how things are going economically in the United States?
It's a good indication, Dave, that the job market just really isn't budging much. And that's been the primary complaint of late, that people who are engaged in job searches are finding them to be frustratingly long. That is something that the graduating class of 2025 from earlier this year has been experiencing. And it's interesting because the unemployment rate of 4.3% is still historically low. But to the data that we got in the report, the number of job openings, 7.2 million, a very little change, although it did exceed expectations. And that is essentially giving us a situation where the number of job openings is roughly parallel to the number of people who are unemployed and seeking jobs.
You know, it's interesting.
Yeah,
we had a local small business survey out yesterday that found the biggest complaint from employers, not only here, but nationwide right now, is that they're having trouble finding qualified job applicants. So we have applicants saying it's too long to find a job, and we have employers saying it's too hard to find good job applicants. There's some disconnect there.
Well, there's always been a skills mismatch, and this speaks to, you know, how are people essentially situated with respect to the skills they bring to a prospective employer. I've heard going back for many years that very often employers are very concerned about the lack of so-called soft skills that job applicants possess. So for example, that might be, are you a great team member? Do you interact well with the public if the job requires that? How are your communication skills? Do you collaborate well? Those are things that it's unlikely you're going to be taught in college. And for hard skills, in other words, things that you do learn in school or at least have to be taught, you know, much of that revolves around artificial intelligence now or technology skills. Those also are not always the skills that we need if we go to a four-year school. So there is a mismatch there, and that's not going to be resolved anytime soon.
Mark, how are the markets reacting to this jobs report that finds essentially no growth but no decline in job openings?
Well, and let's say this morning, the futures market indicates we have a modest decline on tap for the stock market on the order of between 1/3 and 0.5%. So that is just another day on Wall Street. The markets are going to regard this as potentially an inconsequential event. Obviously, if it continues as long as it did last time, which is 35 days, that's much more consequential. So investors are at least hoping that this doesn't have a lasting economic impact. But it does create a problem, Dave, because we won't be getting the monthly employment report that would have been due on Friday. And so at a time when the economy is seen at a potential inflection point, jobs creation slowing, we're not going to have that visibility on what's actually happening, at least through the lens of very important government data.
We are still seeing lots of inflation, whether it's from the tariffs or from other economic factors. How is that impacting the markets? And that with the government shutdown, what does that mean for our daily lives?
Americans' principal complaint about the economy is elevated prices, and that's the result of inflation. And tariffs basically have two essential economic impacts. One is to create headwinds for the economy, to slow growth, and growth over the next foreseeable future is expected to be somewhat subpar in the United States. The other is to create pressure to the upside with prices. And so if the Fed were in the process of winning the war against inflation, it now has other battles to wage because tariffs are continuing to cause that.
Will the government shut down? Will you and I feel it in our daily lives? Obviously, in your professional life, you will, because you're not getting government data during the shutdown. But will the average American be impacted by the shutdown?
Not visibly. You know, if they want to get some non-essential services from the federal government, those aren't going to be available. But the so-called essential services are delivered, such as air traffic control, you know, law enforcement, the military, those kinds of things. But if you're going about something that is less complicated, less crucial, you won't get those services, and some you know, federal institutions will be closed. If you're a business that relies on the federal government, if you run a sandwich shop, et cetera, that federal workers frequent, you're not going to get that business.
That's a good point. Yeah, we're right near, our studios are right next to the federal building in downtown New Orleans. Should be easier for us to park around here, and we won't have to wait in as long of lines at the local restaurants, but that's not good for them, and while it may be for us.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of On Deadline, written and produced by Christy Strouser and by me. You can listen to and subscribe to On Deadline on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.